I see supply chains reconfiguring to more of a regional structure, being more forward-looking and innovative and resilient to take into account changing conditions, disruptions, but not to just be completely resilient. You have to also be proactive. Yep. So that you can take advantage of opportunities as they come along. So I think that the supply chains of the future will be those types of concepts, and they'll be led by people who are innovative, willing to invest when everyone else is not. So it'll be an exciting future for those that want to succeed in the supply chain in the next couple of years.
Hello. Happy New Year, and welcome to The Future of Supply Chain, a podcast where we discuss hot topics, best practices, and the latest innovations in today's global supply chain. I'm Richard Howells, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Nicole.
Hi, everyone. Nicole here, and happy 2025. So today, as we enter a new year, we're talking all things supply chain and gazing into our metaphorical crystal ball with Lisa Anderson, diving into predictions and outlooks for the year ahead. So Lisa, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us here today, and especially to kick off the new year. So just to kick off this episode, could you just take a quick moment to introduce yourself and give a little insight into what you do?
Definitely. So I'm Lisa Anderson, president of LMA Consulting Group, and I'm a former vice president of operations and supply chain for a mid-market manufacturer. In essence, we work with clients, typically manufacturers and distributors, to help them improve their customer value and their performance to the bottom line.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to the conversation, Lisa, and thanks for agreeing to join. So as we move into 2025, what do you see as both the challenges and opportunities for supply chain executives?
Well, supply chain risk has been, or risk alone, has been really the hot topic of 2024. And it's definitely not going to be disappearing anytime soon. Risk leads to disruption. So from the Russia-Ukraine war to the war in the Middle East that has created challenges such as the Houthi rebels attacking ships in the Suez Canal, to drought conditions in the Panama Canal, to Hurricane Helene causing Baxter facility to shut down. Disruptions and risks have been heightened in 2024, and many of those risks are carrying forward. We're really in an era of volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, also referred to as VUCA.
It's interesting. I wrote a blog at the start of 2024, and one of my first predictions was that risk resiliency is here to stay. And I think if I was writing one, and I will be writing one in 2025, it'll be exactly the same. So how can companies prepare themselves and their supply chains to be more resilient in the face of all of this disruption and unknown of what lies ahead?
Well, there's actually a lot of things that they should be doing. So I can talk to some of the topics and then dig deeper into them. So one of the key things, it seems like a common sense item to do, but a lot of companies have not necessarily done it. And that is to have a true backup source of supply. Let's start simple. And when I say a backup, when I was a vice president of operations and supply chain, we had a key supplier of materials. It was non-woven material from Brazil, and we were private equity backed. So they really didn't want us to spend extra money, which is understandable. However, the director of procurement said we really need a backup source of supply in South Carolina, somewhere in the United States. And it was in a cost war, and we would have to purchase 20% of our needs from this source of supply so that they would be there when we needed them. And it was a real hardship to get all this added cost, in essence. But it came to fruition. As you would know, something went wrong. Ports went on strike, I think, or something like that. And our backup source of supply, even though we were a small guy overall, supplied us, not necessarily the competition, because we have been doing this. So a simple backup source of supply is a good place to start. Diversifying your supply. There's technology solutions. There's reshoring. So we can go into many of those topics. I'll let you decide.
Yeah, because that example that you gave, you not only had a backup, you had a local backup.
Correct. Correct.
A regional supply chain strategy, in effect.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was just going to say, is that one of the key components that I see clients moving towards, at least the proactive ones, is more of a regional source of supply. So, you know, if your customers are in Asia, produce in Asia for Asia, if you will. If your customers are in North America, produce in North America for North America. That type of thing is becoming more, you could say, popular, but also it's risk mitigation and it's trying to provide customer value because customers have very noteworthy requirements and they don't want to wait long periods of time for products. So a regional supply chain has many advantages and it's going to be the wave of the future.
Agreed. Agreed. And the first point that you made about diversifying your supply chain and your ecosystem, we've started to see that just from COVID. People are starting to realize, okay, we no longer can resource or source from this one person because their plant is actually down because everyone's sick. It came at them at full force back in 2020 and has become a main topic. And with that, and now expanding your ecosystem and your network, that now calls for higher visibility across that full ecosystem and having that collaboration across. So as companies really start to shift into this broader network of suppliers, vendors, sourcers, whatever it may be, how can they really improve that visibility across their full supply chain and that network?
It is a critical topic. I mean, in the last 20 years, we've gone global, right, in our supply chain, to your point. And visibility has become a real issue because what we're accustomed to is Amazon-like service. Your product is five stops away, but that would be fabulous. I mean, we need that sort of visibility in companies, but it's not that simple as it seems to be with folks like Amazon. So overall, that visibility is needed to have the right products in the right place at the right time and to manage your supply chain at the least amount of cost, even in the global supply chain. But to your point, as supply chains evolve, which is not going to happen overnight, but it's going to be a trend over the next several years, it's going to disrupt supply chains. Because if you think about it, you're moving partial supply, probably, from, let's say, China to Mexico or maybe to South Carolina. We'll go with that example. Or maybe both. And so the demand in different countries and with different suppliers are going to be different than they were in the past. So whenever things are not consistent, you know, like when you have a stable forecast, nothing is changing, it's pretty easy, really, to run the supply chain. And now it's going to be different because they're moving the source of supply chain and the forecasts aren't going to be right. They're going to have new players in the mix, new technologies, different rates of automation and that type of thing. So to your point, visibility is quite critical. And what I would say there is that you must have a modern ERP system to start with and one that's keeping up with changing conditions, which is no easy task anymore. So you really need a system where they're investing in the latest technologies so they can provide tools like visibility and additional customer value. So I would definitely highlight the need for ERP, but also the need for related technologies that should integrate with your ERP system so that you can get statuses like supplier portals, customer portals, statuses from your carriers and transportation partners and those types of things. Yeah.
That's great. We've already covered the need for network design to be able to adjust your supply chains and have regional or local supply chains. The network collaboration of sharing that information and then that network visibility or even transparency to react in real time. You have to have the data, not just from your business, but from everyone that affects your business as well.
It's actually a very critical point you bring up because one of our specialties is what's called SIOP or Sales Inventory Operations Planning. And what we find is that clients can even have all of the pieces of information, and they may even have a great ERP system. But if they don't put it together in a way where you can understand what your demand is, your sales forecasts, and what's happening with your customers, and then also look at your sources of supply, your manufacturing operations, and be able to bring all those pieces together, that's a key component of gaining visibility, to your point earlier. And then that leads you to ways to optimize all of those pieces as well. So you can be visible, but you also can be profitable.
Right. You started talking a little bit about technology in your last answer. And we're about 10 minutes in, so it's about time to start talking about AI, because we always talk about AI in this podcast. And if we don't, an AI-generated question pops up to make sure that we do include them. So how have you seen the adoption of AI across supply chain processes to date? And where do you see it going?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I see that AI is absolutely the hot topic in supply chain circles. And some of the, well, I guess you could call basic uses of AI have been around for a long time. It's just not necessarily always being utilized. For example, predictive analytics as a part of a forecasting engine can provide a lot of value. It's evolved, but it's one of the areas where I see people utilizing AI, if you will. Another area, like automating mundane tasks, is certainly occurring. Less so in terms of predictive maintenance, although I'm seeing more and more with the larger companies, they'll start doing more predictive maintenance, IoT, and that type of thing.
Especially as the products that they're maintaining get smarter.
Yes.
Have more data. So it's a natural place for AI to leverage.
It's absolutely a natural place for AI. And also to bring that up, another area that you just reminded me of is transportation management, or looking at all the options and routes. You know, it's a great application for AI, and that's improved over the years, especially with the advancements in AI. So that's another area that's been applied. And of course, predictive analytics is another area where companies should be doing something with analytics, data analysis, ideally moving towards predictive analytics. Although I would definitely also say, don't go crazy thinking you have to be doing predictive analytics when you don't even have the right information to make decisions. So you do have to look at what you're doing here in the right order. But to answer your original question, I would say that the adoption of AI, you have to look at it with small and medium size versus large. And I would say the large companies are investing in AI, in AI applications. They're along the curve, but it is taking longer to adopt than you would think because there's a lot of talk about it. In the small and medium size, if they're proactive, they're definitely trying out things. You know, like there's robotics and it integrates with AI, and some of them are testing those types of things. But a lot of them are saying, let's wait until there's an application that I can utilize for my size business. So I would say there's less progress in that.
Yeah. And it always comes back to ensuring that there's an actual business case for these AI applications. I think we've said it in other podcasts where it's the shiny new toy right now. And people are like, all right, let's just put it in and see what it can do. And
right.
Or there's mandates from the executive saying we have to leverage AI.
Well, yes, yes. It's actually very similar to the whole outsourcing thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the past, when I was in charge of manufacturing, the thing to do is like, why haven't you outsourced yet? Well, it doesn't make financial sense. Why haven't you outsourced? It's like that kind of a thing. But yeah. To your point, you did remind me some of the ERP softwares like SAP are doing impressive things with AI as far as like being able to look through all the data in your system and come up with answers that can save a lot of time. Things like that are taking effect, but you know, slower. I think the problem is people have to keep up with AI and you have to have the right skills to work with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there's so many different ways to leverage it nowadays and seeing where it fits within your ecosystem. One of the biggest ways that we've seen is with this next generation of workers. And I think this upcoming generation are really trying to look at those technologies being implemented into their day-to-day life and the workforce and technology working together for human and robotics. So as we move into the future and these generations of workers start to evolve and change, how do you see like automation and AI and that type of technology working together with the workforce?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question because like when I talk with technology implementers, if you will, they say really the people can't keep up with the technology is their view of things. But on the other hand, like you said, it's a really tough time, actually, because the baby boomer generation, some of them are still here. If they are, they're running around frantically and they're leading organizations. A lot of them retired. And if they retired during the pandemic, there probably wasn't a long training curve or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so the generation following them is just not as big. And talk about people running around with their hair on fire. It's pretty much how it appears. And so there's not as much leadership capabilities and people. There's just not enough resources. Like we're automating mundane tasks, which is fabulous. And we should be utilizing AI, human learning, et cetera, and like rolling out as much as we can. But it just pretty much means that we all have a really big shortage of high-skilled talent. And we're not going to be able to hire them away from other places in abundance anyway, like we used to be able to do. So we're going to have to build them. So that means we have to train, develop, educate, which is what I see as different from training. That circles back to leaders. So really, I think what we need to be doing is training our talent and technology go hand in hand. We're going to need to be creative about how to get some high-skilled folks to supplement our workforces. Like actually, I've been working with several clients in the last couple of years where they have people come and go and things happen. So we'll like just jump in, help their people through actually doing whatever needs to be done to keep the business going while not getting stuck in doing the business, because that's not a good thing for a consultant. We want to help them upgrade the process and then sustain the process on their own. So more and more clients need that type of help. Even the ones that tell me, I don't need that type of help. I really just need somebody to advise. But then once we get in there, there's always somebody that needs a little extra help.
That's the age-old implementation challenge back from when I was doing implementations in the last century. You need to help people, but they can't be reliant on you in the long term because it's just not sustainable. They have to take ownership. They have to have that expertise themselves and build it up themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's a lot of like typical leadership things that you should be doing. But for sure, I think what organizations need to do overall is talk about AI, talk about some of the advanced technologies, explain how can they add value to that organization, to their customers, or to make their employees' lives easier and better. That, again, goes back to people explaining all these things. If only that was easy.
That was easy. None of us would have a job.
That's right.
I think one of the things that you talked about is having those high-skilled workers in there. And no matter what stage of their career they're in, whether they're new to the company, about to leave the company, retaining that information that they have and that knowledge that they have is the use case that I'm seeing AI can be leveraged in. And like I said, no matter what career level they may come in, turnover is inevitable, whether it's people retiring, going to a different opportunity, or even just like taking a week of PTO. Sometimes that knowledge can even go with that person if they're in a different state or in a different country.
You reminded me of something that is a really good point to bring up. And that is, I had a client that had younger folks in their warehouse, actually. Mm-hmm. And they weren't making any progress whatsoever when they were talking and giving them handwritten things to use. And so I have to give, I don't know what his title is, but basically head of operations, a lot of credit. He's very forward thinking. And so he said, you know, I started putting it into the computer or automating it. Maybe it's a little small degree. And suddenly they understood what he was saying a lot better. So I think it's just trying out new things and also appreciating, like you said, the younger generation's idea of looking at a database, automating. Why put this whole SO standard operating procedure together manually, get the 80-20 done, and then we'll tweak it. So yeah, there's like benefits from that point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the situations where that could be leveraged is, of course, across labor shortages, whether, like I said, turnover, people just leaving the company, things happen as we know. Supply chain, things are always happening. So how could you see that type of technology really being leveraged in the shortage challenge that some companies are facing?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Certainly automating all the tasks that are repetitive and upskilling, not just saying, great, I automated this, now I'm going to get rid of this person. Instead, we should be upskilling people all along and different people have different talents. So you can't just treat everyone like a cookie cutter here. Figure out what it is where they can add value. Like I said, it's harder, but better, and then give them some mentoring, training, education. And actually, I had this person that worked for me who was really good as a cost accountant, but he was older, close to retirement, and he didn't really want to use the ERP system that they had, or he wasn't opposed to it. He just didn't want to use it more. And then the younger folks were like, we should get rid of him. He's not very good. I was like, oh my goodness, he's the one who helps us figure out where all the cost is going and how we're going to save money. Like, we should just pair people up so he can be paired up with somebody who has the technology side and they can learn, because after all, the system is not going to tell you're triple counting this cost somehow.
Yeah.
Because you're counting it as different things. It doesn't know. You need both. So anyway, I forgot your original question now, but that's one thing that popped to my head.
No, that's honestly a perfect answer to the question. So
I wanted to move on to another topic that comes up a lot in discussions, especially as the business systems are moving or have moved to the cloud. And that's the whole concept of the security of the data and the system itself. So what role do you see cybersecurity playing in our supply chain strategies moving forward?
Well, I think it has to be a huge role because there's a very big risk. Actually, I've had multiple clients before they became clients that had cyber attacks. And these people, most of them were robust. They were decent size. That's probably why they survived. And they were doing some of the right things. I mean, there's a lot of cyber, unfortunately, criminals out there, especially when you think about it from a supply chain point of view, because you just have to look at the exploding pagers that were going on. That's like a piece of the supply chain. And then there's the Salt Typhoon cyber attacks that have been going on. So there's a definite risk. And really what I would say is that folks have to be vigilant on putting in the right protocols. And more companies are definitely going to the cloud, and they're going to experts that manage their IT systems and infrastructure. Although that alone, of course, doesn't do it, because it still has to be accompanied with education. So folks know not to answer emails that look suspicious or those kinds of things. But it is a really critical topic. I think it's going to disrupt the supply chain in the future, which is going to provide an opportunity for people who are doing a lot of things we talked about, regionalizing supply chains, looking at securing their supply chain. They're going to have more opportunities than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And on top of kind of protecting your network, another thing that's on the long list that executives have to take into account is the sustainability aspect of their network as well, making sure that they're moving forward with sustainable best practices and initiatives and such. So on the same note of your network, maybe not from a security standpoint, but how do companies and executives really ensure that they have a sustainable supply chain and also meet those ESG goals?
Well, that is a tricky one. So I would say that, first of all, again, the small company, larger company are two very different things. Generally speaking, the larger companies are investing heavily in environmentally friendly type programs. And ideally, you make it into a win. I've written countless articles on that topic. The more you can reduce waste, save on packaging costs, you also can improve your sustainability and you can better plan transportation with the AI algorithms we're talking about. If you use advanced analytics to evaluate routes, if a disruption occurs in your supply chain and you can reroute, sustainability is one of the choices. So it's going to remain critical. However, at the same time, I think we have to think about this in terms of common sense, because we were talking about regionalizing supply chains. And if we think about it, we've invested a ton in terms of the ocean carriers in making them as efficient as possible. And then we have all these rules and regulations to try to make, for example, in California, there's a ton of rules and regulations to try to increase the sustainability and zero emissions, which is great. And the technology doesn't necessarily exist yet to get to where they want to go. So we obviously have to keep focusing on that. But we also have to remember that if that's one piece of our end-to-end supply chain, if the other piece, like in China, they're permitting a coal plant per week, it's like the gorilla and you're worrying about the squirrel or something. So anyway, it's basically we should be looking at the end-to-end supply chain, utilizing tools in ERP systems to track it. Although you can't think it's just a tool, you have to be able to ask suppliers for information and collaborate. So
no, absolutely. And it all comes down to building out your risk resiliency. And whether it's coming from making sure that you have visibility across your network, to implementing those sustainable best practices, to implementing AI, like we said earlier, I think executives have their hands full. But thankfully, there's a lot of things that are available to them nowadays to really make sure that they're not only putting forth the best supply chain that they can, but one that's, you know, best for the environment as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities to your point. And just even the folks who are willing to look forward, invest in the appropriate technologies, invest in the appropriate talent, and make changes to their supply chain proactively will have more business than they know what to do with.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the perfect world.
Hey, Lisa, we're coming to the end and it's flown by, which is a compliment to you because it's been really interesting. Well, we have one question that we ask all of our guests. And as we look at the new year and beyond, I think this is a really important one for this particular podcast. So in a few sentences, what do you see as the future of supply chain?
Well, I see supply chains reconfiguring to more of a regional structure, being more forward-looking and innovative and resilient to take into account changing conditions, disruptions, but not to just be completely resilient. You have to also be proactive. Yep. So that you can take advantage of opportunities as they come along. So I think that the supply chains of the future will be those types of concepts, and they'll be led by people who are innovative, willing to invest when everyone else is not, those types of traits. So it'll be an exciting future for those that want to succeed in the supply chain in the next couple of years.
Great. Thanks very much. That was a great answer that capped a great conversation.
Very good. Well, it was fun to be here.
Happy to have you back anytime. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Please mark us as a favorite. You can get regular updates and information about future episodes. But until next time, from Lisa, Nicole, and I, Happy New Year to everyone, and thank you for discussing the future of supply chain.